Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we're back with another episode. Of course, we've been doing our updates for COVID on the weekdays earlier in the week, but we're still bringing our regularly scheduled episodes out at the end of the week. So we've got a great episode lined up for you tonight, and I'm going to kick things over to my co-host, Sam Bradley, who said there was like nasty thunderstorms coming through last night for you.
Oh my God. I don't know what time of the morning it was, but the thunder was, I mean, thunder, lightning. And Kyle can confirm that that kind of means it's on top of you. But the thunder was so loud. Then I'm trying to go to sleep again and the hail hits. And he knows very well how I feel about hail. And then we had another one this afternoon. So did you get any of that, Kyle? What's going on? How much more of that are we going to get?
Well, Sam, for you, you're definitely right. If there is not a lot of time between the flash of lightning and that clap of thunder, that means it's pretty close to you. And the shorter that time is, the closer it is. So good thing you were inside safely in bed, away from any electronics and things that could possibly carry a charge inside. Looking ahead for you there in the Front Range of Colorado, still stormy and unsettled, but clear out by the weekend. And Jamie, though, looks like you're under the gun for some rain moving in. And that's all coming from a storm system that's producing a widespread area of flooding and flash flooding from eastern Kansas all the way up through southern Michigan. And southern Michigan does not need any more rain. Lots of lakeshore flooding actually occurring on the shores of Lake Michigan right now. And looking further south now, I know that Atlantic hurricane season does not officially start until June 1st. However, Mother Nature has said, well, it is 2020, and we're going to keep 2020-ing. There is currently a area of unsettled weather just off the southern tip of Florida that is forecast to develop into a tropical system in the next couple of days. But thankfully, even though it is going to produce some high winds, high surf, and torrential rains over southern Florida, the Keys, and northern Bahamas, that's forecast to track off to the north and east here once it finally gets its act together. So just another hint that weather does not follow those typical seasons and dates and times that we like to put on it.
2020-ing. I think that's a very profound phrase there that will go down in history. So for our Southerners, Dr. Joe in Memphis and our friend Chris Pressman in Oklahoma City, what are things looking like from them for them?
Well, hi, everybody. It's been actually after a few days of rain, we got some beautiful weather, and I think we're going to have a beautiful weekend. So looking forward to springtime, maybe.
Maybe. Well, we need to keep the tornadoes out of Oklahoma and we'll all be good. Well, we need to get going here. So we have our friend Chris Pressman, who's been here many times because he's such a smart guy. The best thing I did in my career was make him an EMT because he has taken off and changed the world of EMS. He's always got something new he's creating, and that's what we're going to talk about. But first, Chris, what's it like in the COVID world in Oklahoma City?
Well, the COVID world in Oklahoma City was a lot of buildup and a lot of analysis of data, unfortunately, for basically we our numbers did not certainly peak where they were projected to. We have obviously understood our lack of preparedness across the board, which I think was a great exercise. We were able to correct most of those discrepancies, especially on the EMS side of the house and the hospital system side, and we're prepared in case that peak did come. But I am happy to report that we have downtrending data at the moment and plenty of hospital beds and ICU beds. So in the event that we would have a second wave, as they're liking to term it, I think we would be in a good position to handle any and all situations.
Well, that's good to know. I remember the last time we chatted, somebody brought up the fact, well, what's going to happen when the storms come through and you got a bunch of people in tornado shelters and so forth? And you went, oh, yeah, guess we ought to think about that. Obviously, yeah. You have done that. So
we did, and I passed it along to my EM colleagues, and I think they probably had the same look on my face when that I had when you all mentioned it. I was on the phone, so I didn't get to enjoy that. But I do know that there was a lot of discussion in the EM world about that, and I think that they've prepared as best they can for those situations. Fortunately, meteorology and weather have been on our side, and we haven't really had a big event this year as of yet, but it's my understanding we're going to extend a little bit into June with our season this year, so we may still see something.
Well, I'm sure Kyle's doing his best to keep it that way for you. that's crazy. Well, you have a couple projects you've been working on, and I find them both quite fascinating, as have Joe and Jamie. And the first one is your proposed EMS evaluation and counseling tools. Now, most large companies especially have that, but yours is more specific to focusing on performance traits. You want to tell us about that?
Absolutely. You know, in my career, I've worked for a few different agencies, and, you know, you enter into those realms and you talk about performance evaluation, and you talk about evaluations for, you know, critical incidents or sentinel events or things of that nature. And as I grew up as a young supervisor and now a director, we've always, at least in the situations that I've been involved in, had documentation that would start and it would be for that specific event. And then if we had another situation, we would have to document that situation. And of course, sometimes those two paths didn't cross or they didn't meet. And so now you've got a bunch of documentation on a bunch of different situations. And what I have found that we don't really conquer is the development of the person as an individual and as a professional. And we're not giving them the waypoints or the rubric or the feedback that they really need. So I actually, I follow Jocko Willink quite a bit, if anybody knows who he is, and listened to a podcast a few weeks ago and kind of took away the thought processes of building something similar to what the U.S. Navy has, which I'm a veteran of, that I was evaluated on. So I developed that tool in the thought process of not only could this be a quarterly or an annual evaluation tool, it could also be a tool that's used if we would have a situation where we would have to counsel or evaluate an employee for a specific situation. And then I kind of thought about it and said, you know, would this not be an interesting thing to provide this to the employee so that they could actually grade themselves every day on what the expectations of the organization are? And hopefully that'll be the roadmap to their success. So that was kind of my thought process behind that.
It almost sounds a bit like a preceptor report that every day they're kind of graded to see their progress. Joe, how are you doing things in Memphis? Is that similar?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is important not just to look at the sort of more mundane pieces of that, but if you expect people to get better and you know, push themselves, and I think you've got to set some expectations and give them some feedback on how they do that and let them know when they do that well.
Exactly. Jamie, thoughts on that?
Not really. I think that, you know, there's so much that needs to be done at on the big picture of EMS and how we look at the whole industry. That I'm just interested in hearing more of what Chris has to say about it, because, you know, like you said, there are big companies that have some tools that they use, but there's nothing industry wide that I think is appropriate for assessing providers.
And Kyle, you have a whole different set of evaluation tools for dispatch and for ski patrol and everything else you do. How does this sound in comparison?
Well, I really like it where in this case, it sounds like what Chris is proposing, right? You have that, you have a piece to center a conversation around, right? We've all been in those meetings, those informal conversations, wherever they happen, where you have the old sandwich method, right? The tried and true method where you're doing this great, you're not doing so hot here, but you're doing really good here, right? let's level that playing field, as it were, and give people, right, an honest, objective way to evaluate not just themselves, but to know that that's how they're going to be evaluated as well. So increase that transparency. And I'd actually like to know a little bit, Chris, actually, what are some of like the categories or like the traits that you use in this rubric?
Well, what I have done is I've broken it down into seven what I call performance traits: professional knowledge, quality of work, command or organizational climate, professional bearing or character, personal job accomplishment, initiative, teamwork, and leadership. And the way that I designed it was, is I have a scoring system that technically is a 1 through 5, and I have set standards at the 1, 3, and 5 point levels. And then what I've done is at the 2 and 4 levels, the 2 level is progressing but does not meet all of the 3.0 standards, and then a 4.0 exceeds most of the 3.0 standards. So in all honesty, that probably should be meets all 3.0 standards and maybe has accomplished 1 or 2 of the 5.0s. But I think you said it very eloquently. It gives the individual the ability to truly look at their performance on those 7 planes and go, did I do the right thing here? You know, have I performed at a level that I feel is acceptable to myself and to what they're looking for from me? And I think in EMS, we have a lot of knowledge and a lot of great ability to mentor and train. But I think a lot of that circles back to our own personal preferences and not a more, wide view of what really needs to happen. So that was one of my goals to design this tool. I'm currently working it through our leadership system to see if we can at least do a little bit of a test run and deploy it and see how it looks. But I'll have to keep you guys advised on that.
Well, the two things I like about it, and having been in exactly your position as a paramedic field supervisor and clinical education specialist, was standards and expectations. You know, when somebody comes in and says, oh, I didn't know I was supposed to do it that way. And it, again, I kind of refer back to preceptor evaluations where it's kind of opinion based. You know, the more standards and performance traits you have that are very specific, that they know what they need to, you know, at each different level, what they have to aspire to, there's no excuses. This is the way it is, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. The other thing I like, this is really fascinating. You might have to explain to those non-fire people out there what an ISO rating is, but you kind of took that idea and you were looking for EMS finding an identity and a value assessment for the communities. So you kind of looked at the ISO rating system and you kind of did something with that. You want to explain that one?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, I think one of the big problems in our industry is that we feel that we have to create value because everybody always seems to devalue everything that we do in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, when you're in the profession of EMS, whether you're a fire-based system or you're a private entity or you're a third service, you always have stakeholders that are looking back and trying to figure out what the worth of this is and what the value is. And I've been in private EMS all of my life, so I have always had to contend with city leadership, you know, that doesn't really know how to fund these situations and those types of things. And when I looked at the fire system and I looked at the ISO ratings and specifically the public protection classifications, which the insurance service office or ISO uses, they place a value and a risk based on what the fire department in your community has at their disposal. And they break that down into basically 3 different categories, which is what they call fire suppression operations. So that's anything from equipment, staffing, training, you know, all of those categories and how capable that your fire department is. That's a 50% of that rating. Then they talk a lot about water, because obviously if you don't have water, you cannot put out fire. So they've graded water systems and hydrant systems, and that becomes 40% of it. And then there's a communications piece that's about 10% of it. So when you're looking at the value of the fire service in your community, you know, this ISO rating becomes a big player because it determines your, you know, your insurability, if you will, or the level of insurance and the risk. Well, I've come to the conclusion that EMS is just as important in that risk assessment based on the fact of if you have a heart attack, if you have a stroke, if you happen to fall off the roof while you're hanging your Christmas lights, and a good, sound, clinically sophisticated EMS provider arrives and takes care of you appropriately, there's a substantially good chance that you're going to arrive at the appropriate destination, and that with doing that, you're going to be able to be treated appropriately, and you're going to be able to return back and still provide for your family and provide for the dwelling and kind of decrease that risk as well. And I think that from a national standard, if we could get everybody together and put this particular thing in place, we would then have the ability to demonstrate value on a standardized and measured scale that then we could set a correct price point and a reimbursement point so that we could sustain these systems.
And there's nothing like that out there right now, as I understand it, but it defines a mitigation risk for the community, which makes sense. And in your notes you sent us, there's no credential or evaluation system that quantifies the benefit of pre-hospital clinical care and the impact it has on morbidity, mortality, and financial impact of the communities we serve. So that kind of puts it in the nutshell, right?
Yes, ma'am. There is no one specific tool that rates all that. We've got a lot of really great professional organizations in the education realm, in the licensing realm, in the management realm, you know, CAMES, those types of things. But what we've never done as an industry is take all of those really important accreditations and basically create a system where you go, if you have this, 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 and this, and you can obviously prove via data that you are performing at this level, then, you know, we're going to rate your public protection classification at this for EMS. And I think that that's a very scalable and sellable product, not only to communities for what they're paying for, but I also think that also now filters back into the reimbursement realm where you've got CMS evaluating that tool and going, okay, if I have a class 2 EMS system, maybe I don't require CMNs because I know that the documentation that I'm getting is accurate and appropriate. You also have the ability to go to private insurers and basically qualify your level of service, and maybe that would help the reimbursement a little bit better, because one of my jobs is doing pre-billing QI, and I spend a lot of time analyzing run forms and analyzing documentation and trying to figure out, you know, what's working and what's not working, and that target constantly moves. Whereas if there was a set standard for what a, you know, class 1, class 2 EMS agency gets reimbursed at based on their proven performance and the treatment of the patient, I think we would all be better off and there would be a lot less deficit when it comes to funding.
I love it. Jamie, you had a thought question.
Yeah, I was just curious, Chris. So what you're really talking about is if, for instance, let's say a hospital system has a designated stroke center in a community, and that stroke center, you know, part of its certification works with the local EMS system, you're saying if there was some kind of standardized system that could say this EMS system is now part of that stroke center, that, you know, the training goes all the way down and back up again. That, you know, things like that, systems that are already quantified in the hospital setting could be quantified in a standardized way in the EMS setting.
Absolutely. And stroke is a great point. I can tell you off the top of my head, there are at least 4, if not more, that I maybe not be aware of, stroke, pre-hospital stroke evaluation tools. And some are better than others. But the stark reality is that, you know, those large vessel occlusions that we need to get to a stroke center for interventional radiology or whatever the case may be, none of those pre-hospital tools really match up with the hospital tools. So if we had that system in place and we could demonstrate that as a system of care, that the EMS agency and the stroke center are on the same page, and that this is the way this goes, and have data feedback down through the system so we can prove the fact that the EMS system is actually improving the outcomes of these patients, then I think we have a marketable tool to go to not only the insurance companies, but I think you go back to your community, because you can say, you know, living in this community with this type of EMS system becomes a very, very, very safe endeavor, or safer endeavor, based on this, 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 and this. And I think more people would find value and be willing to financially support that system versus, you know, a system that would be a lesser performer. And I don't think we do a really good job in our industry across the, you know, entire span of proving our worth.
I agree. Joe, you got to love this.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with the where you're going with this. I love the idea of doing that. I think part of the problem that we have is that in many communities, EMS is not even considered an essential service. Just police and fire, and you know, maybe water and electricity, and that's about it. And so, to me, part of the first step is just to get that very basic recognition done. From the standpoint of proving our worth, I think the other part of that is that it's a whole different set of insurers that we're going to have to deal with here, and that's the health insurers, the life insurance people, not the property insurance people. And, you know, they've done a pretty good job of trying to reduce their risk, but the life insurance and health insurance folks just have a different approach to that, and it's obviously much more challenging to get past some of those barriers. But I love the idea.
Kyle, you had a question for Chris.
Yeah, and this talk of the EMS system and kind of quantifying how that EMS system performs, I'm curious, Chris, who are you including in that EMS system? I mean, some communities have medically trained volunteers like community emergency response team members, medical reserve corps personnel. And like here in Colorado, we have private sector medical providers like EMTs and paramedics that work for Aspen Ski Company that provide that first response service on the mountain before handing off to a local EMS agency. So how would they fit into this?
I think if they are part of the care team and there is the ability to initiate the care and document that from the first hands on the patient all the way through that system, then everybody absolutely gets included. I would even love to see some data, you know, years ago with King County in Seattle and their high school CPR program and the data that poured out of that about the survival rate in King County based on you couldn't get a driver's license if you didn't have a CPR card, and every single episode in the seizure was getting CPR was kind of a tongue-in-cheek moment for the EMS world. But the stark reality of it is that is a benefit to your community, and that should be something that we should all be obviously, you know, promoting and trying to get done. A lot of this thought process recently came kind of to light in a group that I'm involved in with a lot of industry folks across the spectrum, and not to discredit their efforts and things like that. But I've heard everything in that group from Stop the Bleed and community CPR classes to cloth masks and things of that nature. And I can tell you that when I was a young coordinator at EMSA, we tried a lot of different programs, and the community interest was there up until the point to where they had to expend something, whether it was time or some type of financial benefit. But I think if you sold them on the fact that this value is going to help you across the board, and Dr. Joe had mentioned, you know, life insurance and those types of things. That's where I'd really like to try to drive this, because there's really two sides of funding here. There's a preparedness side that there has to be units available, ski patrol available, those types of things to have this care there in the, you know, time of need. And that's one cost. And then there's the cost of providing that service on the backside, which is really where our reimbursement comes in. And I think if you set this up right, you cover both those costs because people see the value in what they're paying for. You know, again, no discredit to my fire colleagues, but they have an excellent reputation throughout the world. They do a really outstanding job of making sure that people know about that and they understand the value of the fire department. And we touched on a little bit earlier, people really don't look at an ambulance as a public safety necessity. They don't really think about EMS until they need us. And then by God, we better be there quick and we better have the best of everything. And what they don't realize is that they probably spend more on Netflix a month than they do on, you know, sustaining their EMS system, which is kind of where I'm trying to drive this.
Amen. Jamie.
Well, as it's been said around here in more than one occasion about, you know, the fire service in the United States is they've done a really good job with pushing home building code changes and, you know, residential sprinkler system code and things like that, they've kind of almost put themselves out of business because they don't have the call volume that they used to have related to their what was happening previously, because they've made buildings a lot safer for habitation, for workplaces, for everything. And that's been one of the things that they've been able to show and prove to the insurance industry to drive these standards. And until we can do something similar, you know, whether it's improving overall life expectancy, so life insurance companies aren't having to pay out as many claims, if it comes down to improving outcomes for specific types of injuries and disease processes, then we can do the same possibly for the medical insurance industry. But, you know, the fire department's a great example that you use because, like I said, they have reached a point where cities feel comfortable closing fire departments, you know, specific stations down because they just don't need as many as they used to.
Absolutely. And they've created, as you said, a great program. They've got the NFPA standards and they've really pulled together those other items. And they're even with the decrease in fire calls based on the, you know, technological developments of fire protection, they're still leading the charge. And I think we take a page out of their book and utilize their knowledge and assistance with connections. And I think we try to drive this forward. Unfortunately, you know, I'm kind of in the autumn of my EMS career, so maybe I can get the ball rolling and hand it off to some real stalwart young guys and gals, and they can move it forward. But in my experience, I've never encountered anybody that's tried to attack it this way, and that's what kind of really intrigues me about the project. So I'm just trying to get some wings on it and get it in flight and see if we can do something with it.
I'm kind of curious, Chris, looking at a larger non-COVID world picture. You know, you have hospital accreditation standards. You've got your EMS thing is fully developed and working, and the standards for fire. Would there be a way, do you perceive, that say, I want to move to Oklahoma City or Memphis, but I don't know which one I like best. I want to see how safe these communities are. And you go, oh, well, Memphis is a 3, Oklahoma City's a 2. And you can figure out why and figure out why that's important to you. Is that feasible?
I think it is. I have heard tale. I have not actually encountered this, but I was in a meeting a few weeks ago with some gentlemen from the greater Dallas metro area who were doing some investing in some of the peripheral bedroom communities in Oklahoma City. And Oklahoma City looks a lot more like Dallas every day. But they were mentioning places west of Dallas that the first priorities they moved with was the quality of emergency services, fire, police, and EMS, and the school districts. And they really feel that they develop these communities and the community growth based on those two things. Public safety was a very important factor, and the school districts, obviously, to take care of the children and educate them were really the things that drove people to those areas. And I really feel that as an industry, we can show the cities why you would want to live there. You know, we're a marketable tool for them to, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, to the city government, to promote business growth and things of that nature. We just, again, we haven't really attacked it in that manner. And we've always been treading water because we're concerned about, you know, the next big situation or what's the reimbursement going to look like this month, because CMS has been off for two holidays or, you know, things of that nature. And I think everybody that's a leader in the industry has probably gone through those woes. They just are so inundated and bogged down with the day-to-day stuff that we really haven't had a chance to open this agenda up. And like I said, I'm hoping to make it take flight. So this may be either my greatest discovery or my worst failure, but either way, we're going for it.
I can't imagine it being a failure at all. Joe, final thoughts?
Well, I think you summed it up nicely. You know, there's no question we need to get some sort of way to provide an objective value to EMS and have it impact our ability in the community to prove our worth, whether that's a financial worth or a safety worth, or, you know, from an insurance standpoint, that's about the dollars, of course. But I love the idea of trying to make this an objective assessment and make it where it has teeth in it.
Mr. Kyle.
No thoughts from me. Thank you.
Well, I don't know what to say. But Jamie, this is kind of your world in a number of aspects, so I'm sure you're as impressed as I am with Chris, huh?
Always. And Chris has been, there's a reason Chris has been a pretty regular guest on the show over the years. And this is just an example, another example of why, because it's not just, sitting around the break room table and saying, well, wouldn't it be nice if, you know, it's a quantifiable written down document that he sent us on both these subjects, to point out exactly how this can be of benefit to the entire industry, and not just the industry, but to the communities we serve. And I think that that's important. We talk often in the Disaster Podcast about preparedness and about the importance of community resilience. Community resilience, a big portion of that is overall public health. And this is something that, you know, can serve the public health. If we can get to people faster, if we can treat them more appropriately in the field, get them to the right hospital, do all the right things, quantify that, then we can find a way to, represent exactly how healthy our communities are. So when a disaster strikes, our community is a little bit stronger because of it.
Joe, you had another thought you wanted to throw out.
Yeah, I think Jamie summed that up beautifully, and I think the current pandemic really puts an exclamation point on that. Everybody is coming to appreciate, at least I hope, how much EMS and emergency medical systems make in their community, and that those folks are on the front line of these kinds of disasters. So I think strike while the iron is hot would be my suggestion on moving this project forward.
Ooh, good one. Jamie, take us out.
Well, and I think that this is, it comes from leadership, and leadership really starts with training the leaders from the ground up. And it's one of the things that I think Joe and the rest of the guys at Paragon Medical Education Group do such a good job of is bringing innovative leadership in the training community to everything that they do. And as things start to open up around the country again, training budgets are going to be freed up to start bringing in different innovative things to prepare us for whatever's coming around the corner. And Joe, you guys do just a fantastic job of pulling that kind of thing together.
Well, thanks so much, Jamie. That is exactly what we love to do. And we look forward to hearing from folks. We'd ask them to give us a call so we can talk to them specifically about what we can do for them. They can reach us on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com or on our Facebook page of the same name, or always through the Disaster Podcast.
And thank you, Joe. We do appreciate your continued support, and especially your COVID updates have been widely spread around. I know when I post them, not only in the Disaster Podcast Facebook group, but I post them personally out shared to my own Facebook page. And a lot of people I know have been sharing those around and commenting on them. So I think it's a good opportunity for people to keep learning and keep being aware of what's going on out there. So thank you for that. Chris, where can folks find you? This is like you said, looking for that energetic young leader out there to help carry the ball. Where can they reach out to you?
I have a personal Facebook page, Chris Pretzman. I'm also in the process of launching another professional Facebook page, which I still have a few things to do, but I'd love to come back and talk about that at some point in time. And my email is CN as in November Prutzman, PRUTZMAN @gmail.com.
Excellent. Thanks for coming on the show again. We love having you. Kyle, where can folks find you?
Well, Jamie, folks can find me on all the social media places under the handle WX Kyle Nelson. So feel free to continue the conversation there and connect. And Chris, again, thanks for coming on. And I love the strike while the iron's hot, but I also like to think if you're not innovating, then you're not getting pushback. So pushback and challenge is good.
Roger that.
And Sam, how about you?
Well, unless I'm under the table because of another thunderstorm, you'll find me on social media under Sam Bradley, Sam Bradley 11, in our very large, continually growing Facebook group and disasterpodcasts.com. How about you, Jamie?
Well, you can find me under the handle Podmedic in most locations on social media out there. Please look me up, friend, follow me, or otherwise catch up with me out there. And, of course, disasterpodcast.com and in our Disaster Podcast Facebook group. Just search for Disaster Podcast on Facebook. We are fast approaching, I think, 800 people over there, which is pretty amazing in that group. It's active. It's growing. You should come by. Almost all of our guests that are on the show are members in the group or become members in the group to answer questions. We look forward to you sharing things that are going on in your community, posing questions, answering questions. It's a group effort over there, and we really appreciate everyone coming in to join that community in the light of everything we've been dealing with. And, of course, hurricane season is just around the corner. We've got other things coming, and not just the current pandemic, but life goes on, and so does our disaster awareness. So we'll be continuing the discussion over there. Sam, good call on getting Chris on tonight. I'm so glad you were able to get him lined up.
Yeah, he's wonderful, because if somebody bails at the last minute, I can call Chris, and he always, A, will agree to do it, and B, has something interesting to say. So that's always a good thing. And to end this, I'll have to say that Dr. Joe Hawley is probably the smartest man in the world, and Chris Pretzman is second. And, of course, we got Kyle and Jamie. So there you have it, the most important people in the world.